Now, Nick Haas was supposed to give this next presentation, and Nick changed jobs, so Derek Deichel has offered to give the presentation, which helps me out quite a bit. And I've been told that any questions that Derek cannot handle, that Rebecca will handle. And you are with SEH in Duluth, Minnesota, and SEH stands for?
Short Elliott Hendrickson, okay. And Rebecca and I are actually in St. Paul.
But you're in St. Paul.
The Duluth office is running a lot of the project.
Well, I appreciate you.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, let me ask. So the presentation is peatland humification and subsidence related to ditching.
Thank you. Yes, unfortunately, Nick, thank you, can't be here to present it. His background is soils. My background is aquatic ecology. Rebecca here is soil scientist. So I'm going to skew it a bit, but actually it was a great introduction that we're going to do some vegetation discussion as well. This is related to a project that we're doing in northern Minnesota. It's related to the Saxon bog, which some people have heard of. It's really known more for its birding area when people hear in winter of the owls have come down from Canada and you want to add it to your bird list. This is the place that a lot of people come to. So this is our site. Our project is just short of 24,000 acres, so we're dealing with a very large bog complex in northern Minnesota. It used to be part of Glacial Lake Upham, and it's since the glaciers have passed has become extensive bog. It was ditched in the 1920s for agriculture. That was not particularly effective. Within our site boundary, we have almost 73 miles of ditches. They have not been maintained in general. Some of these were cut once in the 20s and haven't been touched since then. Overall, the site is very flat. If you go across our transect from the northeast to the southwest, we're going about 7 miles, but we're only going down 54 feet in elevation. So we have a very, very shallow gradient as we cross through the site. So our question, and this is really proposed because we're looking at wetland banking as a restoration mechanism, is we initially ran into some resistance from the regulatory agency saying, well, yeah, there's ditches out there, but they don't really have much of an effect. They're there, but they don't have any effect. So that was kind of our question is, well, we think there's some effect, but is it a little effect? Do we actually kind of see it going beyond what we would expect, or is it actually quite a bit larger than anybody would expect to see out there? And we look at visuals and go, well, some of these small laterals that are cut across here haven't been changed since they originally cut, but clearly just from vegetation patterns, something's going on out here. In 90 years, we would expect that to look a little bit different if indeed these had no effect out there. And so that was part of our hypothesis is, well, clearly these laterals cut across here must be doing something or this would look a lot more uniform. So we kind of had a big generic question. At this scale of a project, how do you actually measure a ditch effect in these peatland soils? And so we went, first of all, let's go the easy route, scope and effect equations. We went, no, they're not designed for peat soil. That we can come up with a number, but we can't really support it. So we started to look at, well, hydrology, that works well. We ran into some issues with that with frozen ground because it's a big bog. It doesn't freeze uniformly. It doesn't thaw uniformly. We get all kinds of weird things. Historically, there were water cracks through the area, so our groundwater elevations are naturally changing. So we put wells out there, but it's difficult. We looked at vegetation, and I'll talk a little bit about that because that's somewhat telling in some ways. And then our most conclusive way is looking at soils and then ultimately topography. So I'm glad you mentioned the floristic quality assessment. We did do that across the site. This is kind of a typical shot of a northern rich fen with a water track, one of our most undisturbed areas out in the site. Some areas are very highly disturbed. Others have not been touched since they were initially cut. And we found a nice relationship as we go from the most disturbed to the least disturbed that our values go up. And we look at the difference between being near a ditch and further away from the ditch, and we find consistently that our scores go up as we get away from the ditch and our scores go up as we get less disturbed. So that's great anecdotal information, but how do you correspond to what is their area of effect, because we have a very large gradient. And for fun, since I want to throw some vegetation in here in a soils conference, we looked at the tamarack trees out there because we were curious. We noticed that, you know, they seem to be a lot bigger and thicker near the edges, and as you get into the interior of the bog, they're a lot smaller, they're a lot more sparse, clearly more indicative of what conditions should be. So we actually took a bunch of cores out there and looked at the age of the trees and calculated growth rate. And this was more of a side project because it doesn't necessarily tell us what the ditch influence is, but it helps demonstrate, well, there is an influence here. Our trees that are near the edge of the ditch grow a heck of a lot faster than some of these that get, 400 feet away, where it tends to kind of level out. So that tells us, somewhere in here there's a break point of a couple hundred feet where clearly we've got a difference here than we do here. And it's not necessarily telling at that distance, but clearly there's something going on. And a lot of this is rate of water delivery, nutrient delivery. It's just more conducive for the vegetation on those edges. But it also suggests that that's not a natural growth rate. When you can have a tree that's 10 years old, that's the same diameter as a tree that's 150 years old, and they're 500 feet apart, that's telling me there's something going on here. The site is almost exclusively peat soil, very, very fibrous. When you dig cores in there, sometimes you can find old trees, root wads, masses that are under there. So it's a very woody origin. But we do have lacustrine, sandy sediments underneath from when it was a glacial lake before it became peat bog. And we have areas of upland that are scattered throughout the site that are probably islands left over from when it was the lake, where we actually get more sandy material. Fairly rare, but it provides that upland-wetland complex and not just one uniform bog, uniform soils throughout. And part of what Nick did when he was looking at the study is we had him go out there and do a bunch of analysis on the physical characteristics of the peat soils that are out there. So he went out there and did Von Post analysis, which looks at the degree of humification. And we did a number of transects out there to get a sense of it. So this transect here, number 8E, is actually in an area that's not very disturbed at all. It's almost bog right to the edge of the ditch. And you can see we don't really have much change. We think right around 3 is what a kind of a natural Von Post value would be for an undisturbed bog. As we start looking at some of our other transects, you can see, well, we have very high rates of humification near the ditch, and the overall trend is that it declines as you get further away. And we're kind of getting in that, 400-foot area in there. And we did this at a number of locations, and there certainly is some variability in there, but my understanding of the Von Post is there's a lot of interpretation. This is all assembled after you have all of the data and look at it. And I say overall, and visually, if you go out there, if you grab a handful of the peat soil near the ditch, you can go, this is the coffee ground. It's breaking up. This is clearly not the same, tangled peat intact profile you find elsewhere. But it helps, particularly in a regulatory role, to have a value to go with it to say, well, this is what we're observing. This is an anecdotal. There's actually is a physical change occurring out here. And what we think is happening, and this is supported in the literature as well, is historically, there was one profile. Because the area is so flat, we're fairly certain that was a consistent profile. As those ditches are initially cut, they start to drain, lower the water table, and they end up with these areas adjacent to it that are no longer saturated, which leads to decomposition. And over time, in these mucky peat soils, that groundwater continues to go, and these ditches continue to embed themselves deeper and deeper and deeper as they drain. Adjacent areas dry, they decompose, and they continue to embed themselves further and further into it. And overall, you switch from an ombrotrophic to a mineralotrophic system, at least within these ditch zones that we see out here. And this is kind of a self-perpetuating process where it continues to embed further. And it occurs over a long period of time, and it's not really noticed. And when it's all vegetated and full of sphagnum, you don't really see it. But we went out there and thought, well, this might be a way we can actually look at our ditch effects out here. So we took LIDAR data. I think we had about 1,800 cross sections that we shot over all the ditches. And some of the areas remain flat. There's a ditch here at zero and really no change. Each of these bars is, I think they're 1 foot increments. Some areas we have a little bit where this ditch has subsided, and we have clearly a kind of a subsidence zone as you near the ditch. And some of them are great big systems that have actually embedded themselves quite significantly. And on systems like this one, if you walk out there, you can clearly see everything is sloping towards the ditch. And the thought on it is, well, that's where they cut the ditch. But in reality, the ditch was cut 13 feet higher. It's worked itself down over 90 years, 13 feet into the system, and has perpetuated this very broad area that it's effectively draining. Just for a distribution, most of them that we cut out here, some of them, very few actually, are very, very large. Most of them, 85%, only 4 feet deep. If we look at the breadth of that subsidence area, 89% of them are less than 300. We're in a fairly confined area, but there's certainly some that really extend a great distance out from the center line of that ditch. Interestingly, did some statistical analysis to kind of get a sense of it. Our initial thought is, well, if it's really embedded itself, it should have a really, really wide corridor. In reality, and I know people don't always like to show data that's not very supportive, but basically there's no relationship. You can have an embedded ditch that might be 13 feet deep and it's only 50 feet wide, and you can have one that you can measure subsidence out 400 feet and it's only a foot deep. So it's very variable out there with what exactly we see for an effectively drained area. But we took our topographic changes, and anywhere we could demonstrate that we have a change in topography, we're able to say that topography change is a result of altered hydrology. And it's somewhat conservative because there's certainly altered hydrology that's not sufficient to change topography. But we're able to conclude that we at least have a portion of the site where we can definitively say has been effectively drained, and we can measure it with topography. And so of our site, we have 2,900 acres, which is about 12.5% of the site has physically changed as a result of the ditches. So for curiosity, we had Nick kind of look at it and go, well, what does that equate to? Is that a big deal or not? So we ran some numbers on the peat volume, figured out the volume of material that we've actually lost from historic elevation, made some assumptions on the percent of carbon that's within the peat for northern Minnesota, and concluded that for this particular site, 1.1 million cubic yards of carbon have been lost from the site. And you go, well, it's a very big site. Can we put that in another context? Easiest way to look at it is go, well, per acre, we're losing 984 cubic yards of peat, which is the equivalent of about 80 dump trucks per acre, if you want to put it in some sort of visual perspective of how much we've actually lost over this site, which is pretty stunning when we started the conversation with, well, we don't really think they're having an effect. They're there, but they're really not doing anything. You go, well, over 90 years, we've lost 80 truckloads of soil per acre within these subsided corridors. I would argue that's a significant change. So what do we do about it? Well, it's an approved bank, so we actually have got approval in June of 2015. We had to legally abandon the ditches because they're still public ditch. So in order to do the work, we had to go through the ditch authority and make them no longer public ditch so we could actually disable those. And our construction is we're actually filling the ditches to stop the drainage. And for material, we're using everything on site. So we're using existing trees because our tamarack trees near the ditch are too big, too dense, and really not a supportive community. We kind of figured if we restore hydrology, they're probably going to drown out. So why don't we use those as our ditch fill? We don't have to bring in material. And then we have some spoil that was present at times, and we do have the ability to use borrow from on-site if we need to. And in conjunction with filling the ditches, we ought to put checks in there so that if we do have flows down those channels, we're diverting it and spreading that out. And the thought behind it is, if we want to restore this watershed and put it back, we have to restore the hydrology and the ecology will follow. And in order to do it, we're in a bog. It's an area that is extensive, it's inaccessible, very difficult area to work, so we're using these large floating excavators because they can work in that type of situation. And it's kind of hard to look at and go, oh, that's a pretty cool excavator, but what are we really dealing with? And go, well, that's the track. These are very, very large machinery. They're out there. They have, even though they're that big, manufacturer says it's 1.5 pounds per square foot of pressure. I've never let it roll over me to see. But if you watch them go by, it's amazing how little impact they actually have driving over the bog. They really do a great job. So our first step is to actually fill the ditches. So in this case, this is a portion of the channel that's been stuffed. And instead of removing the trees, you literally peel them off like a scab, where we have the root wad intact. So we have a 5 or 6 diameter root wad that gets lifted out of there, and they are stuffed and overlapped there to completely seal off that ditch, with the thought of using the root wad and the soil that's on there essentially makes an effective plug for most of the flow. And then any flow that would be above that channel, we're blocking with a constructed ditch. This one happens to be an all-earthen one for a smaller lateral. Some of the other ones have a lug spillway where if the water comes up, it would divert and go over that lug spillway as erosion control. So since we were able to start construction here in August, this is an example of what one of our areas looks like. So clearly we've got a ditch running down the center. And as we talked about before, we do have an area of subsidence. So if you Picture the trees here are relatively flat, and as you near the ditch, our topography drops fairly quickly. This is a pretty typical ditch out there. Existing bog, habitat in here is more of a wet meadow. So this was taken at the end of July. We initiated construction, filled the ditch, installed the check. We are not grading these corridors. We're not doing anything different other than filling the channel, building a check across it. And after construction, this is what that corridor turned into. This check is, this particular one is about 75 feet long. The ditch used to be here and it's been completely filled, and we've restored the hydrology that's tree line to tree line. There's as much water going down the old channel as there is coming out of the trees and across the corridor to the other side, which is phenomenal to me because we figured this would be, after 5 years, we hope to see some sign of hydrology change. We saw it within 2 months. Now, September was really rainy. Some of this is being stored, some of it's precipitation that we've managed to capture. But overall, we looked at it and said, well, that's pretty amazing. We didn't expect that, but it's fantastic. Here's another location, same thing. We've got a ditch. We have a bog very close. The water flow is from this gradient. So what you're having is bog. It's intercepted and whisked away. This area is starved. This area is more or less natural. We fill that channel up. The whole thing goes back to being wet again. And what's interesting about this particular site is everybody thought that the ditch check itself would be what's stopping that hydrology. So this is the old ditch here that's been stuffed full. Obviously, we've got water, and it's coming out of the tree line towards this corridor. If you take this photo and you turn yourself around and look downstream, there's no check. In this area here, it's all been filled, and once you get back to the section that hasn't been worked on yet, all this water funnels back to that channel and leaves the site. So even within a very short distance of a couple hundred feet, you can see that we've leveled out this corridor and all this water goes back to here where we get back to that subsidence zone. And interestingly enough, we went back after construction and looked at some of these checks and go, this doesn't look right. This was much higher. These logs were exposed. And you know what? This corridor actually looked like more of a V, and now it's all flat. And interestingly enough, this is some of the equipment used to get around. And I had them pull up here because there was a check here, and now we have a series of log spillway that's become a raft. In some of our upper reaches, where we had bog relatively close, in putting in these spillways, our checks, and filling in the channel, we've managed to actually raise the profile 2 to 3 feet, and we've turned these corridors into floating bogs. If you were to jump off the back of this Marshmaster back in here, you'd be up to your waist, and you'd be kicking free water underneath. And that's in 2 months. I don't know what's going to happen long term. We expected this would be a decades-long observation of restored hydrology, but some of these corridors that were subsided several feet have essentially flattened themselves out. Now, this is 2 months into the project. I don't know what exactly is going to happen, but in summary, the unmaintained ditch systems, everyone assumed that they don't have an effect any longer. That's not true. They're very effective for a very long time, and they don't keel themselves. There's a number of ways to measure drainage effects, but we found the physical change in topography is conservative, but you can't deny it. There's a physical change that occurred because you've altered hydrology. There's no way to say vegetation changed, it's climate, it's changed. Restoration is possible. It's a lot of physical work. We expected the time frame to be decades, but some changes in hours. We literally drove by a site, they're working and putting in the check, you come back through and the water's up 3 inches in an hour. Downstream, it's completely dry. We have completely soaked the sponge, so to speak. And this particular project is a wetland banking project, and we're not here to talk about banking per se, but it's an excellent vehicle to promote restoration. This project wouldn't happen if there wasn't an economic reason behind it to provide additional incentive to do it. And for Bruce's sake, I wanted to just leave with how we determine wetland crediting. So anyone that says that the regulatory world is simple, this is our flowchart for how we derive credit. And then that.
Questions? No questions?
What is wetland banking?
Oh, wetland banking, in a generic sense, if an applicant, someone has a project that they have to fill wetland or have an impact, in order to offset that, typically you'd have to create wetland on your own. In Minnesota, we have a wetland banking program where you can purchase credits that somebody else has restored, enhanced, or created a wetland to offset it. So it's somewhat equivalent of buying carbon credits for air emissions or something like that. So this particular one is a very large site in Minnesota, but northern Minnesota, we have a number of taconite mines. They have very large impacts, so this actually goes into an area that I think historically, and this is in the Lake Superior watershed, the banking program there would typically have banks of 10 to 20 acres, very small, but their impacts are measured in thousands. Taconite mine expands, there's 1,000 acres we need. So this satisfies the watershed approach because we're putting, in the end, we're hoping to have about 1,400 credits out of the 24,000 acre site derived. And it's all off the watershed approach. Everything is being thrown in, it's lumped. It's a total value project, not splitting everything out. We had to go through this to demonstrate how to get to that number, but in the end, it's a percentage of the total area restored based on percent ditch fill as a surrogate for restoration.
So yep. I saw where you were filling those in, and I was just curious. You didn't mention, maybe you did. You don't revegetate those. You just create the hydrology back.
Right.
You're sort of helping the Mother Nature fill back in with the natural.
Right. And when we're transferring those tamarack trees, because they're taking them in toll, in total, the whole tree is coming out of there. We're transplanting that peat soil that's attached to that roots with it. And within a couple weeks, when we're in good growing conditions, we're already seeing sphagnum, sedges, a bog birch, other plants are growing out of the center of that ditch in the transplanted material. We're very concerned on the site of bringing in invasive species, so all equipment was cleaned before it came in the site. Nothing leaves. It stays in the bog overnight. They shuttle back and forth with equipment. We didn't bring in a single seed. There was some questions on erosion control. Do we need to, you know, seed the site when we've disturbed it? And we said, well, there's a greater risk of bringing in invasive species than there is in erosion.
I've heard of this, but yeah. Like in North Carolina where I am, on our banks, they are required to plant 8 species.
Yeah.
A list of 30. And
right.
You, in fact, have to go back if red maple and native species come in, they're not on the list. They have to take them out.
And we've seen that before, and that was some discussion. We're, in this particular one, everybody agreed that we'll have to observe it. We certainly have a monitoring period and success criteria to meet, but so far just kind of moving material within the site has been sufficient.
What are some of the things that you're going to be monitoring and success criteria?
Invasive species is number one. We need to make sure we don't turn these into reed canary grass or cattail highways and introduce it. So that's number one. Number two is hydrology, demonstrating do we actually restore it. And we're kind of in the process with the regulatory folks. They also didn't expect this kind of response so quickly, so we may revisit that. I mean, our success criteria was that we would meet a reference condition within 5 years, and we've exceeded a reference condition in 2 months. Probably not a great success criteria at the moment. There's some other ones for vegetation, reference sites, FQA scores, some things like that. For the most part, it's more of a visual. Did it actually come back to be more like the interior of those ditch systems than the perimeter? So on the scale of a big complex project, the success criteria is remarkably simple. It's almost pass-fail.
So in Minnesota, for every acre of wetland that's lost, how many acres are typically scored?
It depends on where you're at. The ratio is typically averages 2-to-1. Northern Minnesota, where this one is, it's usually 1-to-1, but there's a lot of variables in that. Wetland banking is the method of choice. If you can do it in advance in the particular watershed, you get the lowest ratio of replacement. The Corps has really adopted the watershed approach here, and if banking is an option, you're almost forced to do it. You will do banking over project specific, if at all possible.
Thank you, Derek. Yeah. I'm laughing about the light situation. They are controlling the lights. We do not have control.
I thought you had magic abilities.
Yeah. Lights on, lights off. Right? You know, I would say the question I get the most, and I assume you do too, is what's the effective drainage area of that ditch? Over and over and over again, we get that. And you plug in the numbers, well, you can plug in the numbers and get whatever answer you want.